Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome to this very special edition of Car Chat, where it's not just me, Nathan, but Andre is here because, well, we need him today. What are we talking about, Nathan?
We're going to be talking about cars that we've driven, that we've gone to events for as well, and we're going to take you a little bit behind the scenes because many of you don't realize that we actually go to these press events, and it's been, what, 4 months, and we've gone to, oh, about 3 dozen press events already.
You have a big list here, Nathan.
Yeah, I mean, we're a third of the way through the year, and here we are already with so many vehicles that we've driven.
And these are new vehicles, so we're talking about 2024s and
2025.
So if you guys are out there waiting for what's the greatest and hottest, newest vehicle, well, we're going to be talking about it because we've been behind the wheel. So what do you want to start with, Nathan?
Well, let's start with the Hummer EV. Now, this is the SUV version. Tommy went to an event right after the beginning of the new year.
I'm going to one on Wednesday.
Ah, okay.
I'm going to a Moab on Wednesday.
Well, another event.
That's the SUV version,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, to go drive it off-road. Mm-hmm. They're going to show us that it has some off-road chomps, and I can't wait.
That's going to be chops.
Chomps.
You can say chomps, you're old. one of the benefits of this is that GM is really messed up when it comes to embargoes and everything else because we've already driven one as well, haven't we?
We have. We went out to our local dealer, and it's actually several of Hummer EVs on display.
Well, last week we saw three of them at Johnson's Auto Complex.
Yep. And so you and I drove it as well.
That is correct. So that video is out there. We've already driven it. So it's kind of a lukewarm thing, but at least Roman gets a chance to play with the chompies.
And also in Moab, of all places.
Which is really the place.
Amazing.
Yeah, that is really the great place to test it. Now, electric.
GM just did the craziest thing, right? Everybody else is kind of out there trying to make electric cars as fuel efficient as possible, as, shall we say, green as possible.
Yeah,
and
green.
GM said, screw that. What we're going to do is we're going to stick the biggest frickin' battery you could find.
You can run the space shuttle on it.
Exactly, into this thing. And we're looking at over 200 kilowatt hours.
And put the biggest tires on it make it square and large.
They doubled down on America.
Well,
the Europeans, it blows their mind. It just freaks out their mind.
Which I don't blame them. But now I've talked to some GM people just recently, too. We talked about that. And they basically said that this is the answer to the TRX and to the Ford Raptor. This is their future way of looking at it. Like, this thing will outperform them in every way. This is what they say. In every way, shape, and form. And yet it's electric.
Is it a three-row?
No, I don't think that
It's a two-row.
It's a two-row, right.
Wow, I thought they would have gone...
It's not very big, actually, lengthwise.
Yeah, because Rivian has three in theirs.
Mm-hmm. In the R1S.
And of course, we'll talk about this later, but Hyundai just came out with... No, it's Kia, right? The EV9.
Which is exactly, actually, the next one that we
went
to.
Well, let's transition to it, then.
So the Kia EV9 was the next one that we went to. That was, I believe, Tommy.
Then we had one here as well.
We have one here as well. So all of us have had a taste of that vehicle. And it's kind of the polar opposite of the Hummer in respect to the fact that it is almost affordable and it's more accommodating. It's really built for your everyday people. Yeah, it's got all-wheel drive, but it's really not an off-roader. You saw that. I mean, it has a pretty low ground clearance.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have a trick suspension. It doesn't have any of that, but also it's...
I mean, it looks like what they did was they really kind of squared it off. Mm-hmm. It looks like a baby Suburban in some ways, right?
Yeah.
Like they took the Suburban and made it electric and shrank it down.
I would say, its profile...
Yeah.
It's like a shrunken down one. But, I mean, a two-box setup is kind of standard in this territory. But impressive vehicle, nonetheless.
I've been seeing a lot of them on the... I just drove by the Hyundai dealership, and they have a bunch of them lined up in front. So I think Kia is, working hard to sell a bunch. But they're expensive. So the Hummer is expensive, right? How much? 100 and...
I think it's 10.
Like 109 and like 115.
Yeah. It depends on the features, too.
That's very rarified air. And how about the Kia? Is it a little bit more affordable?
Oh, yeah. It's about half the price. Actually, even less, I think.
I think it's like 50 to 70.
Hey, podcast listeners and TFL Talk viewers. I wanted to take a minute to talk to you about a quick and simple way to sell your car or truck with the help of our new partner, HiRoad. With HiRoad's online portal, you enter your vehicle's VIN number or plate, mileage, and zip code, and you'll get competing offers from several qualified dealers in your area within seconds. You pick the best deal offered and follow through with the dealer to sell your car. No more managing scammy emails from buyers on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. No more time wasted on no-show buyers. No bait and switch with a "will you take a check" excuse from sketchy buyers. Now keep in mind, these offers will be for trade-in values of your vehicle. If you want to go through the hassle of getting more for your car, that's up to you. But if you want to sell your car hassle-free and fast, go to tflcar.com and click Sell Your Car in the navigation menu. Or click on the HiRoad ad at the bottom of the website if you're on mobile, or click on the column if you're on a desktop. HiRoad makes it easy, and we like easy.
Yeah,
because we had the nicest one, the most powerful one.
And it was 69.
It was like $69,000, $70,000, which is also not
cheap. It's stupid expensive, but you can get a lot less expensive version with the smaller battery, I believe. But it's I'm going to reserve judgment on that smaller battery one until I drive
How much range do you have in the bigger battery?
290.
It's pushing 300.
It's in the 300 zone.
300 seems to be where
the magic number.
Where we're at. Yeah, but I'd love to see somebody besides like Rivian do 500 miles. Right, without having to spend $150,000 to get it. That would be cool,
You know, I would be fine with 250 miles on one condition.
Yeah.
That the charging would be quick. And it's not just the car that charges, because plenty of cars can charge fast.
Yeah.
The chargers charge fast. But we'll get into that whole discussion some other time.
That might be the tipping point, right? Where when all of a sudden electric cars start to get more range than gasoline cars, if that ever
more
happens.
Range, but they have to charge faster. Doesn't range
it's two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, exactly. So, but that's once again, that's a different discussion.
Did you like it?
I thought it was good.
Yeah.
I thought the interior is well done. I'll tell you, Kia and Hyundai are absolutely at the top of their game with EVs. They cover the whole gamut from the inexpensive to extremely expensive to low performance to high performance. They're really hitting it hard, and their charging times are increasing with all their vehicles. So I think they're doing a very good job.
It seems to be aimed kind of at the earth-friendly suburban soccer mom or dad.
Kind of like me.
Well, that's exactly it. Andre, earth friendly.
I love TRX. I go to like a lot of soccer games and volleyball games. No, I loved it. Nathan and I did a video together mm-hmm. with it. And the performance is pretty nice. It accelerates well.
It moves out of its way. Yeah. It feels heavy. That's one thing for sure. It's
every electric car.
But there are electric vehicles, which we'll cover in a minute, that actually feel very light on their toes, which I was really surprised about. But let's move on to the next one, which is the Mazda CX-70, which is essentially a chopped-down CX-90, isn't it?
Yeah, so I went to the launch of that,
and
I just didn't get it. I was expecting, something more than just either a bigger version of the CX-50 or a smaller version of the CX-90.
But they kind of took a CX-90.
And they shrunk it down. They lost the rear third row.
So they took a page out of Honda's book, because Honda did exactly the same thing with the Pilot to the Passport. Am I correct? I mean, they took out a row, they shrunk it down a little bit, made it a little tiny bit lighter, but essentially it's the same vehicle.
Yeah, but they're a little different in terms of the design language, whereas this is identical. I mean, there's no difference. Like, from the speed pillar backwards is the only difference, and that's just it's a little bit shorter. So I'm really
such
getting
a shame.
I mean, and this is a good example of what's happening and the two different approaches the car makers are taking, right? So Kia is building a different design language, a different car for every vehicle they build, and now the Germans and apparently Mazda are just basically copying. It's like
a cookie cutter.
Yeah, or the nesting dolls.
Nesting doll.
Yeah, and I'm just tired of it. Come on, give me something that's more interesting. Don't just take the vehicle and make it 2 feet shorter. That's
especially
lame.
Because I think the CX-90 is a good-looking vehicle. But by copying it, essentially, and chopping it down a little bit, it gives the CX-70 nothing special.
Yeah, it's like it's hard to tell an A4 Audi from an A6 Audi.
Audi's a... Yeah, they are
Mercedes. My goodness.
Mercedes is pretty bad about it.
And the Koreans, how much more work and how much more expensive it must be to actually make a car that looks completely different from not just the previous generation, which they're doing, but from the rest of the lineup. And at some point, I think that strategy is going to win out because people are going to
be
like...
Well, it already is. I mean, yeah. Their sales numbers are... I mean, yeah, they're turbulent right now, but, you know, they are showing by growth that they can do it. Not only that, but they also built EVs, plug-in hybrids, regular gas cars, you know, everything pretty much across the board they're doing. So I give them a lot of credit for that.
It was a head-scratcher. I was on that launch, and people were like, I don't understand what we're here for.
Yeah. Mazda's kind of taken a couple weird turns, and I'm not exactly sure that I'm happy about it, to be honest with you guys. But let's move on to the Ford Explorer.
I was there.
That was your event.
Yeah. Tell us about that, Andre.
I was in Detroit, in Dearborn, actually, at the headquarters of Ford. And this is a 2025 refreshed version of the Ford Explorer. And I was looking at the numbers before I got there. And, you know, Ford Explorer is basically number one seller of midsize, you know, three-row
still is
SUVs. Yeah. Mm. You would think, like, Toyota would have that title or somebody else. But Ford does really well with their Explorers. But they sell, of course, to governments and fleets. And, you know, of course, consumer vehicles as well. And they redesigned it. It's about the same shape. It has a slightly different nose, slightly different headlamps. The interior, you know, I thought they would, like, go next level with the interior, but they just kind of, in my opinion, just slightly changed it just a little bit.
So would you call this a refresh?
Yes, definitely a refresh.
Same mechanicals underneath?
Yep.
Have you guys heard the rumor that Ford, or this is, I'm not sure if it's a rumor or if it's actually been announced, that they might start selling the utility, which is the police version, to the public? Because apparently the police love the utility hybrid.
Yeah, in fact, the hybrid is mostly what those fleets are buying.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tons of power, obviously, to power all their computers and equipment, and great fuel economy.
Yeah, why not sell it to the public? I would agree. It's an interesting thing. I think
because you can't get a hybrid otherwise, right? You can't get.
Well, you used to be able to,
right?
Yeah, but they like and came and left, or I don't know why.
So, the hybrid came out a couple of years ago. We went to an original event for that.
Everybody's like backpedaling. We need to sell hybrids. We need to sell hybrids.
but when I was there at their headquarters, they said, well, we're reserving hybrids only for fleets.
This was really backwards.
That's counterintuitive.
You have to admit, 2024 is the year of the hybrid.
Yes.
So whoever was sitting in that room in Ford and said, you know what, we're not going to sell the hybrid
only to fleets.
Yeah. They were definitely peeing into the wind.
Yeah, you guys, Ford has had major losses with their EV production on both trucks and cars. And so they're throttling back, and I think they're seeing the error of their ways, I'm hoping.
I disagree. So the prevailing, and we can argue about this.
They actually are.
I disagree with you.
Oh.
I disagree with the sentiment that everybody's now all hybrid crazy. You know, for a long time, everybody's like, oh, Toyota, you guys are, you know, behind everybody else, and you're not building electric vehicles. And then the public decided that they didn't want EVs, and then everybody was like, oh, Toyota, you did it right, and maybe we should do it. And I'm like, you're chasing the wrong ball. Look. I think, for a number of reasons, that given enough time, and by enough time I mean maybe 10, 15, 20 years, most vehicles will be hybrids. It's happening in Europe. It's also going to happen here. And we could talk about the reasons for that. Mm-hmm. Not hybrids, sorry, EVs. Will be
okay.
EVs. Yeah. Yeah. And now people are pulling back. I think the problem with EVs isn't the technology, isn't necessarily the charging, isn't the downsides that many people have just beaten to death, you know, forever. It's the fact that they're just too expensive. That there's no price parity. And if you start making EVs, I met a guy yesterday, right, who just bought a Ford Lightning. And I said, man, you must feel horrible. You know, you lost so much money. And he goes, oh, I didn't. I just bought it.
But wait a minute. Yeah. When did you buy it? Did you buy it the price drop or after the price
drop? After the price drop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think when you put EVs on parity with gas vehicles, then the advantages start to shine through. And that means no maintenance, no going to a gas station, you know, no going to dealerships for repairs.
We're still not quite there yet.
I'm sure you guys will disagree with me, and you're like, you think?
Well, we're actually going to talk about an inexpensive EV later on.
Let's keep going on your list.
So the next one is Lexus GX.
Yes, now I went on that program. Boy, Toyota sure did, once again, you know, a 180 there. The old GX was definitely much more luxurious.
Yeah.
This new one is all off-roady.
But that's good.
Yeah, it's good.
That's really good. I like its looks. I love the look of the interior. I love everything about it. And I haven't even driven it yet.
Yeah. There's like a, you know, if it was Toyota, it'd be an be a trail hunter, but since it's a Lexus, it's an Overtrail, right?
Different name.
It's a name. Yeah. But basically, there's a very much an off-roady one. We talked with the lead engineer, and you know, everything he said was what I love to hear, which is, you know, we've built this thing for America, and we built it to go off-road, and we built it to be one of the best off-roaders, which is weird for a Lexus.
It is, but it's not so weird for the, if you think about the GX's past and what it's based on, and it's an outstanding off-roader in the past, and they're looking at, I think, in reality, this is taking the spirit of the actual Land Cruiser from the past, which was a more luxurious vehicle than the new Land Cruiser, and they're bringing it forward for people who miss it.
It seems like it. I mean,
I also think it's going to compete directly with the Land Cruiser in some ways. I mean, the pricing lines up.
Yeah.
So the Overtrail, $75,000, but that's kind of at the top. You can get it for as little as $60,000, which is where
the
Land Cruiser lives. Land Cruiser first edition is $75,000.
Yeah, but the Land Cruiser will have a starting price in the 50s.
And speaking of Land Cruiser, let's just jump to that. I know it's on your list somewhere.
Well, it's in April.
But we just drove it, Andre. What did you think of the Land Cruiser?
So a couple of differences, right? The GX is twin turbo V6, right?
Yeah.
Which is a great power plant for that.
It's SUV. Beefy.
The Land Cruiser is hybrid only. Mm-hmm. So speaking of hybrids, right? Toyota is going all hybrids almost all the time now.
You're telling me that's not a hybrid, the GX?
I don't think it's a hybrid yet. No. Huh. No.
I thought that they were going to do a hybrid powertrain too.
Like a Sequoia?
Yeah.
It's coming, but it's not there yet.
Yeah, it's not in the GX right now.
Okay.
The Land Cruiser, we didn't get a lot of time in the Land Cruiser yet.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We drove it off-road. I thought it was just ultimately, like, quiet. You know, the thing about the Land Cruiser is there's no squeaks and rattles. Everything, it feels like a bank vault.
Agreed. Moving even off-road. Old ones seem to hold together quite well.
I just liked it because it was smaller. It was more accommodating. You didn't feel like you were driving this big bank vault. I could daily that thing all day long.
But you're talking about the Land Cruiser.
The Land Cruiser. I could daily both of them, but the GX is certainly much bigger. You feel like you're in a... It's a three-row, unless you get the Overtrail, which is a two-row, but it is a much bigger vehicle.
Yeah, but in the Land Cruiser, in the third row, there is no third row, but there are cup holders back there.
Because other versions could accommodate.
I know. I don't understand why.
Yeah.
Toyota is slicing that pie many times.
I agree, and I think that they're
really slicing it.
I think that they're doing a little bit more corner cutting to save a little bit on their investment. You know, that's what I think. But let's go into the next one just real quick. Honda Prologue, that was me.
Yeah, tell me about it.
So that is the same platform essentially as a Blazer EV. Which I also drove, but that was technically last year.
It was.
So Honda fired the GM.
Yeah, and it's the only one they're going to do. They killed the contract right after that. Although I got to say, I like the Prologue better than I'd like the Blazer. I thought it was just a little bit more of a, felt like a regular car that had really good dynamics. But at the same time,
it was a switchgear Honda.
Switchgear Honda?
Yeah, because Honda, you know, the stocks, controls, was that all Honda?
The components.
The switchgear.
GM, right?
Most of it was GM. You could easily see where GM is, but Honda has their own infotainment system, which means they'll actually have Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. They have their own interior components, and they managed to differentiate themselves pretty good against GM. You know, normally when you're going from one GM product to another, you can really see things that are, you know, this is all the same. With Honda, they managed to make it a little bit different. But at the same time, it's not cheap, and it's essentially older tech. Not cheap is, it's going to be in the $50,000 to $60,000 range.
I think it starts around 50-ish, right?
Yeah.
I think what happened was Honda got behind the ball with electric vehicles.
Bingo, on the nose.
And they
were trying to find a partner.
They were trying to find a partner with the Ultium platform. GM said, yeah, we'll work with you. But then, you know, when I was growing up, right, there was a lot of platform sharing.
Oh, yeah, it still is.
And now it's come back, you know, with BMW and Toyota. And companies will say, well, it's a great way to save on cost, you know, save on R&D. But I don't like it, dude. I don't like the fact that there's a BRZ in 86. I don't like the fact that the Supra is half BMW. I just feel like if you're a car company like Toyota or Honda, you should have the technology and wherewithal to actually build your own.
I talked to Honda about that because I said, you know, this. You guys are getting a lot of flack. Because
engineering is what we're talking about.
And you're getting a lot of flack for this. And then they were really direct. They said, yes, we are. We're getting a lot of flack for this. They understood that. One of the, I think, many reasons why they only did the one car with GM, right? The only other vehicle they have that it currently you can plug in and drive would be their overseas Honda E, right?
And it's like a little baby thing, right?
Which has been discontinued in Europe. It wouldn't have the mileage to work here because it's a city car. Yeah, it's just a city car, which just they don't sell here very well. So Honda is working on their own tech now. They've learned their lesson. But, you know, everything is tempered. So even though Honda was behind the ball when it came to EVs, Honda is ahead of the game when it comes to hybrid systems. Their regular hybrid system is still one of the most competitive out there.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm just trying to think of any badge engineering vehicles that I can think of that have been like super successful, right? Whether it's the Miata or the Fiat, whether it's
the 86. The next one on this list, which is the Genesis G70, it is badge engineered, technically speaking, with the former Stinger. Yes. Am I good?
That's within the brand.
You mean within it?
That's
kind of in the same brand.
Yeah, I guess so.
Exactly.
How about...
Tommy's back.
Oh, thank you, Tommy.
You guys are in for a treat. In the near future, you're going to see a video where Tommy and Case go crazy in the back of a Subaru Brat.
Yeah, if you were watching this on AllTFL, you'll see that we have also put out a truck version.
Performance trucks.
Performance
we
trucks.
Talked about
and
performance
Tommy
truck.
Left during that podcast, since we're recording these at the same time, or back-to-back. He just came back. And he didn't die.
And but the look on his face was like, you're still talking?
Yeah.
Why are you still talking?
And he just recently got married.
You know what's hilarious? I had to run to the bank in between the two tapings, and I saw them driving around the back of the Brat. Their head was like a foot above. That was so crazy. How did people do that?
Well,
you're in California. Did people ride around the back of the Brat?
Yeah, all the time. That was actually a very popular car in Southern California. So when I was in high school, people were still, even back then, were buying used ones of these things and bashing around with them. And it was great because, legally speaking, you could still throw people in the back. They could put on a seatbelt if cops were like being real jerks.
They did that for the chicken tax, right?
Yeah, that was the whole reason.
Seats, we're talking about the little rear-facing seats that they put in the Brat.
Which were remarkably dangerous because you rolled over, you had almost 100% chance of dying.
There were two handles.
Yeah, the old crap handles.
So you could keep holding.
Hey, you were talking about brand engineering, weren't you?
Yeah, okay, badge engineering, yeah.
Yeah, badge engineering. Yeah. Well, I have a really good example coming in
February. Tell me one that works.
So in February, Tommy went out and drove the Mitsubishi Outlander PHEV, which is...
a Nissan Rogue.
You the man, look at you go, Nissan.
Okay, hold on there. Hold your horses, Nathan. First
Am
of
I
all,
good or what?
The Nissan Rogue does not come as a PHEV.
No, but they share the same platform. They have the same hard points. They share the same suspension. They have many of the same components.
In my mind, badge engineering is you take an identical vehicle and just stick a different badge on it. This is very different. I mean, it's a plug-in hybrid.
I just love hearing.
Train,
the powertrain is very different.
But I did like it.
I thought it was okay.
Yeah, the only weird thing about it is there aren't many plug-in hybrids in that class, right? Which is the most popular class right now. So there's the Prime, the Toyota RAV4 Prime, and I think
the Prius Prime.
No, in the small crossover.
Crossover.
Yeah, and that's the most popular segment in America.
So there would also be the Ford Escape plug-in, which is.
But the PHEV Outlander has a little third row, doesn't it?
It does have a third row, and it has all-wheel drive.
But it's CHAdeMO.
Yes.
I was like, when I heard that, I was like...
That's the other Nissan component that's shared, and I can't do that. And they know it, too, but they once again, strapped by money.
Who's gonna stick a CHAdeMO in their house at this point?
For
your home.
No, I mean I've gone to an awful lot of charge places around here, and a lot of them are still CHAdeMO.
Yeah.
But you can only charge.
Well, you had the Leaf, though.
Yeah, exactly, and that did have the fast charger in it.
And then your only fallback is level two charging.
But look, yes. Right? But let's talk about this, right? Everybody's going to NACS, right? North American Charging Standard, which is Tesla. So CCS is out the door,
yeah.
And CCS replaced CHAdeMO. So now they're two standards behind on a brand new vehicle.
I think that they're going to leap right to NACS.
NACS.
Yeah.
Like
they have to.
The glass is always half full. Good job.
I'm trying really hard here, okay? Because that's the type of guy I am. Let's move on to the next
really,
one.
I'm sorry. Oh. But plug-in hybrid, I mean, you don't have a huge battery, right?
No, it's not very big.
So you can charge overnight at home.
Yeah, well,
so that's the whole thing.
Exactly. I think it's 11 kilowatt hour. Does that sound about right?
Maybe a little bit more, maybe 15-ish, it wasn't
very big, though, yeah. So if you plug into 110 even, you can easily charge that thing within an acceptable amount of time.
Can I give an analogy to this?
What?
I would say, remember when cars went from carbureted to mechanical fuel injection to electronic fuel injection? I kind of feel like they're still at carburetors. Like they skipped, they missed the fact that
Mitsubishi.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. You see what I'm saying? From performance, it doesn't really matter.
They have first of all, their tech is different overseas. I think that this part of this is also making it compliant with whatever requirements here.
No, the reason it's CHAdeMO is because Japan's gone CHAdeMO.
No, for now. For now. So it's beginning to sound like Japan's going to have to convert over as well.
I mean, the great thing about CHAdeMO, which that we never used, is you can go. Mm-hmm. Vehicle to load too, so you can actually go both ways.
Yeah, they were the first to do that.
And CCS, you can't do that.
No,
but we're starting to be able to do that now with Tesla. But it's just coming.
I think they just are starting that.
But in Japan, I suppose people use it for that. But here in America,
well,
nobody uses it for that.
They have earthquakes, tidal waves, and Godzilla, man. They got to deal with stuff and blackouts, so they have a car that can plug into their house. I like that.
That's $40,000.
40
that's
grand.
That's a good price.
Yeah, but I think that the one that we had for our burger
more.
Run was closer to 50.
Look, I like that car a lot.
I do too. I think they did a really good job for what they had.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
I would actually drive one.
Yeah, I would too.
Okay, next one on the list. Now, this is the Toyota GR Corolla, but this was a winter driving event.
In the snow.
Yeah.
Right. But that gave us an opportunity to really shake that thing down and give it a shot. And I think
were you drifting at the moment? What happened there?
So we went to Steamboat to drive it on their ice racing school, and we did get a chance in a very controlled manner to drift it. But, it's easy to drift stuff on snow. It's also easy to drift stuff into frozen snowbanks on snow.
Yes.
So it wasn't like, here you go at it.
We actually have a video of a friend of ours, a cohort, who drifted a Buick right into a massive snowbank.
Yes, exactly.
That was a while ago.
Thing about that, which you can demonstrate on snow on ice very easily, is you can change the torque distribution from the front wheels to the rear wheels.
That's really
however
cool.
However you want to do it. And then you can actually play with it and see how it affects your driving. And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think that car is outstanding, and I'm really happy you guys managed to take it onto the snow. Now, the next one here, this is more of a refresh. This is a Tommy event, too, which was Volkswagen ID.4. This is the last thing we did in February, and I believe that was the American version of the rear-drive base model that you can get, so the least expensive ID.4.
Yeah, so they changed a lot of the things that people were upset about, which was mainly the infotainment. Which is better, but they didn't change the things that a lot of journalists have been moaning about, which is, like, no volume control, two.
What about the window switches?
Still two instead of four on the driver's side. Yeah, you have to toggle between them. Those must be harder because they're hard. They're hard.
Well, I think they invested into that switch. And once you invest into something, it's hard to go
back,
right?
I'm trying to say hardware, not software, so it's hard to change.
Yes.
Stepping back from that is difficult, I agree. But at the same time, we can all agree that having proper buttons as opposed to having essentially a screen or a flat plastic panel that you're pushing on just doesn't work. It doesn't satisfy enough people.
I was just driving. I just put a lot of time in behind the wheel of the Ariya, the Nissan electric vehicle.
I think it's a good car.
Yeah, it's a good car, but oh my God, $60,000 for that.
It cannot compete with the Tesla Model Y, which is one of its competitors. And you can't even get your federal tax credit
car. And they like tripled down on touch controls, and I just hated it. They've got touch controls for the HVAC. They got touch controls for the different drive modes, and there are these kinds that have kind of this weird haptic feedback.
Where you push it and it buzzes.
It'll let you know that it hit.
Have you ever had that happen on your phone? If like you push all of a sudden and it like pushes back, and all of a sudden the screen jumps to something that you didn't want to go to.
That happens all the time.
That's kind of how
it felt. I don't want it to.
With the Nissan, I was like. And then I was like, even simple functions like trying to do the preset, I go in and I try, change the channels right away from your wonderful
Aussie
thrasher metal.
Yeah.
To, you know, to just chill. And even then, I couldn't do it with one finger. I had to actually, like, hold down to the screen, use my thumb, because it was so, like, cumbersome and hard to do. I was just not
pleased. Because what you have to do is do this, and it'll go to the rock and roll station you need.
Rock and roll?
Like that?
Yeah, the little devil sign. Yeah, rock and roll. Then you're going to...
What's this sign? This is, like, hang loose.
Yeah, that's for the Jimmy Buffett station and all that.
I'm doing forefinger and little finger.
Agreed. I think that they built a very good mechanical vehicle. It handles well, performs well. A lot of the interior components on it, frankly, are just out of touch.
It's a little.
I just think it's the whole car, actually.
A little too little, too late in some ways.
Oh, yeah. They're so late to the game. And they know it.
They were the first. How does that happen? How do you come
because
up with the
Leaf?
And then just sit on your hands for 14
Leaf.
Years.
Yeah. When they refreshed the Leaf, it was already a little too late, and they never really jumped on that and said, okay, we need to make this competitive again. And I think what happened was they saw what Tesla was doing, and they just kind of kicked the can down the road and just figured, okay, we'll figure out something. We'll still be the value leader. And then the Korean car companies came, Ford came, and they had better product.
All right, what's next, dude?
Next on the list is March. So in March of this year, Roman went to the Lincoln Nautilus. I believe that was in New York.
That was in Palm Springs.
That was in Palm Springs.
Almost New York.
Almost
you
New
were
York,
close, yeah. You were
just on the opposite side of the
New
country.
Palm, or, yeah. Or
New Palm.
Palm, New York.
So you went to Palm Springs. I'm sorry. You went to Palm Springs for the Lincoln Nautilus. How did that go?
Oh, okay, that doesn't sound that great.
So I think.
What about the screen, Roman? Tell me about the.
The screen is really big.
Tell me about the screen.
Yeah, so it's got this enormous screen, 53 inches. It goes all the way across the entire dashboard.
Is it like a hyper screen?
It's not a hyper screen, which is it's not that tall, mm-hmm. And it does have this like massage spa feature where you know you could watch like sunbursts and
ooh wow
that's great for the driver to watch a sunburst
while you're driving. And then massage your back and then scents come in because it's got the scent thing.
Oh, cool, that's cool.
So that was kind of cool, but at some point. Like, it's just too much information when you're driving it. It's just like you can break the screen into different bits. So obviously you have your speedometer, and then over here you have your HVAC, and then over here you have what the outside temperature is, and then you have flight delays, and then you have...
What about your weather station?
How about the way it drove?
It's just too much, right? At some point you like can't take in that much information.
Was it a good driving vehicle?
Yeah, it drives well. So... I mean, it's certainly a Lincoln, so it's not, you know, the sportiest of vehicles.
No, but it's built to be squishy and comfortable.
But actually, it comes as a hybrid, and I think that the non-hybrid is better in some ways. Just like the Toyota that we talked about over at Truck Chat. Talking Trucks, yeah. We got to stop rebranding these. It's gonna,
I know.
Car Chat, Talking Trucks, our viewers and listeners
crazy.
Well, we couldn't do Car Talk because, of course, Consumer Reports, for some reason.
that's already been taken. Yeah, so moving, you know, with that particular vehicle, let's move on to the next one.
Oh, no, let me tell you one other thing.
Oh, you got more. Yeah. Okay, great.
One other thing. There's also a head-scratcher here. The head-scratcher is that they're built in China. So they import them from China. And I kind of feel like politically we're living at a time when that is not the greatest strategy for car manufacturers. People hate when their cars are built in Mexico. How are they going to feel when they're built in China?
And you say that, but I completely 100% disagree with you.
Well, no, let me finish.
Yeah, please.
Because the Chinese also have a different aesthetic when it comes to cars. And so this car feels very much like it's designed for the rear seat driver more so than in some ways a front seat driver.
Okay.
And so I feel like it's been designed for the Chinese market. Buick did that too for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then they import the car to America. And I just don't think that is ever a strategy for a lot of sales.
Keep going.
When it's built for, you know, an aesthetic and a way that people drive in a different country and then they bring it over here.
Okay, in some cases you may be right. However, first of all, your first statement saying that a vehicle is built in Mexico, people don't like that here.
Yeah, have you
read
our comments?
Toyota Tacoma is built in Mexico.
Have you read the comments? Like, the first comment is built in Mexico. I'm not saying, I disagree. I don't mind where things are built.
Let them say that. The sales numbers prove them completely different. Completely wrong. The best-selling vehicle in its market is, you know, just to talk about trucks real quick, is the Toyota Tacoma, built in Mexico for a little while, We've known about this for a while. Plenty of other vehicles built in Mexico. So let's put that to bed right now. Plenty of people buy vehicles regardless of where they're built. Yes, comments. There's going to be people who are snarky and angry, especially people who are like, well, the UAW one.
Well, it just adds a lot of cost. You got to truck these vehicles halfway around the world. And there are port fees. There are shipping fees. You know, there are just, it just seems like there, and maybe I'm not trying to be a globalist or non-globalist. I'm just saying there's plenty of factories that could build that vehicle in America, and you don't have to go to China.
The Ford Explorer is built in Chicago, by the way.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay.
What
look,
is this?
Look, I don't have a horse in this race.
Let me give you an example and how the world has changed. So when I was in grad school for journalism, right, I had a Suzuki Samurai.
Yeah.
And I had to go cover a story, and there was a strike going on at the UAW plant, the Fisher Body plant in the suburbs of Chicago. And so being absolutely stupid, I drove my Suzuki to cover this.
That must have gone well.
Yeah, that went well. There were like 15 brilliant UAW guys who threatened to turn my car on its side or on its roof. And I begged them, and I said, please, I'm a poor college student. This is the only car I can afford. I don't have... So they spared me, but that was the sentiment back then. And then I think over time, a lot of the European car manufacturers set up shop in America, BMW, Mercedes, Volkswagen in Chattanooga, which just unionized.
Almost every automaker that sells in the United States has at least one factory here.
And the Japanese also came here.
Several.
They were
actually one of the first.
But somehow that pendulum swung this way where people are like, okay, cars are a global industry, and so it doesn't really matter where they're built, even though there was still the sentiment of some people who were like, I want my car built by Americans.
So that's fine.
But that pendulum, I think, has swung back to that original thinking. People really want their cars built. I don't know if that's reflected in sales. No. You're right. I agree, because the Tacoma is the best-selling midsize truck, and even though it is built in Mexico.
Mexico, yeah.
Yeah.
Are heavy-duty trucks like the Ram.
Like the Ram heavy duties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think I get your point, and I think that...
But China may be one bridge too far.
No, I disagree, because there's an awful lot of vehicles that are being sold in the United States that are either built for the Chinese in China or built in partnership with China.
So of course, Tesla builds... Teslas in China for the Chinese market.
Yeah.
And then they build, Teslas in Europe, in Berlin.
They built a lot here, too.
And they built a lot of them here.
Yeah. So?
But they don't, like, they don't... Actually, I think Chinese Model Ys, do they come to America? They might be coming to America.
I don't know about that, but I know that other Chinese vehicles, such as various Volvos and whatnot, are coming here.
The Volvo is Geely. It's owned by Geely, yeah.
Yeah, but they're a partnership.
So it's hard because everything's owned
by... But I get your point. So, to put this to bed, some people prefer having an inexpensive vehicle or a vehicle, regardless of where it's built, the way they want, or other people are preferring them American-made.
Anyway, the fact that it was built in China was really, struck home to me when I was trying to use, it has a Blue Cruise, or the Lincoln, I think Lincoln now is calling it Blue Cruise, too. They call it something else. And I turned it on, and all of a sudden, my dashboard went Chinese.
Well, that was a glitch, I'm assuming.
And they came to me and they said, oh, you must have switched it to Chinese. And I did not switch it to Chinese, because the problem with switching, I've done this before, I've switched things to Chinese. The problem is, how do you unswitch from Chinese?
Because when you're not reading it.
Says the man who probably killed VCRs.
I just turned out Blue Cruise, and all of a sudden, Chinese came up.
Tell me how to fix this VCR that I can't get working.
And then I turned it off, and Chinese went away.
Okay. To be fair, and I'm not even trying to back Lincoln, because I have no reason to, but that was an early example of the models.
Yeah, I'm not blaming Lincoln. I was just really...
But that is a point. So speaking of Asia, the next vehicle on the list, the Kia Sorento. That's a vehicle
that... Did you drive that?
Yep, I did.
It's an X-Pro, isn't
it? It is an X-Pro, and the X-Pro is sort of a wannabe off-road version, so it has more aggressive tires. The tires are good. I actually took it to the ranch and shot that thing going over many of the obstacles at the ranch, and it did well. It's not a perfect vehicle by any stretch of the imagination, but if you're a mommy, daddy type person and need to take kids on the road and you want to find something that can do some light off-roading and it's easily will get to a campsite, this is a good choice. It's a good vehicle. It's just, I don't think it's best in class.
You know what's weird? We should need to come up with a name for it, right, Andre? There was this category once upon a time where there were off-roaders and then there were soft-roaders.
Uh-huh.
And now you have these soft-roaders that are
becoming more off-roady.
So what do we call those?
We call it soft roady.
Soft roady.
Soft roady. Okay. Yeah. All right. What do you think? Okay, done.
So soft roader, soft roady, and then off roader.
I want a nickel for every time someone says soft roady. So we have to, we have to make sure.
I don't think anybody will say that.
Wow, Andre.
No, I'm sorry. But this event was in Colorado. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was.
Kia
it was,
came here.
Right. And so what we did was we took the vehicle over to the ranch, shot it there, then drove all the way to Winter Park. And then in Winter Park, we did some off-roading as well. It wasn't off-roading. You know what it was? It was actually something that you would consider dirt driving and a little bit of snow.
But it has a beefier tire, right?
This is hilarious. So we normally shoot this at our studio, but this is kind of where we have our entrance to our lobby. And I've never seen more people come and go out of the front door today than I have the entire year.
You can't fault them for coming in.
I'm not blaming them. It's just hilarious. Like when a camera rolls, a helicopter lands, and now we just had the postman come in. Before then, they delivered tires. Tommy and the gang went in and out like 1,500 times. So if you see this guy, distracted.
Tommy's just been marching. I think he's doing that on purpose, frankly.
I'm not joking. Right? They came in and out like 30 times at this point. Yeah,
it was crazy. Yeah. Now, speaking of Korea, let's go to Hyundai Santa Fe. That was the next vehicle driven in March.
Is it also soft roady?
It is exactly that. It's a soft roady. even less soft roady because I don't think they currently provide the aggressive tires on it.
I don't like soft roady.
Yeah, you don't like soft roady?
No, you know why?
Why?
Because if you're like in a band, you've got roadies, right? Then that's what my mind goes to. That's a soft roadie. Does that make sense?
No.
You're right, they're called roadies.
I used to be a roadie for crying out loud.
Right, but I don't like it's a weird connotation for roadies.
You know what it is? It's anybody who's been a roadie for Kenny G or Barry Manilow,
people you roadie. Like,
is a soft roadie.
Okay, all right,
we're done. Okay.
Done. Okay. Thank you.
So Hyundai Santa Fe was the other vehicle. Tommy drove that, I believe it was Tommy, and it's a completely different vehicle on the outside. The wrapper's different.
That's another one they completely redesigned.
And then the interior, very different, but the mechanical's pretty much the same. And
you called it a baby Defender.
Yeah!
Look how Tommy's smiling. Look at that.
Yeah, that's a selfie
smile. I mean, Jerry McGovern really has set the tone for these soft roadies.
Soft roadies, yeah.
All right?
Right?
So,
yeah.
Jerry McGovern is the designer for Land Rover. Just seems like with the Defender, he hit it out of the ballpark, and a lot of the design language now is copying that. It just seems.
Why not?
Yeah.
You know, if you can get away with it and still build something that's unique, and there's a lot of people who want something that looks burly but are never going to off-road with it, which is probably half the customers for Land Rover, right? So
what
why
do you
not
think,
buy something?
Andre? You like it?
The Santa Fe?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do like it. The front of it, I love. The back, I'm not completely set on because it has that bar, the light bar.
Do you know why they did that?
Why?
Because they wanted the maximum space for the hatch.
What's
the,
how much do they run, by the way?
They start in the, I believe, either the low 40s or the high 30s, and then they can peak at about 60.
Yeah, and then the Lincoln is, I think the one I tested was like in the 60s as well. My God, cars.
Well, that's a luxury vehicle.
Yeah. But that's where I think it might start.
You know what I like about going back to the Kia Sorento X-Pro? You and I think, saw it in Los Angeles, right? And then the event happened in, February, March. Mm-hmm. And I see them already, people are already bought them. So it seems like Kia is really good, at least Kia, where, they show you something, and like 3 months down the line, bam, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Versus like waiting a year.
Is incredible because most of them are built in Korea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other issue is, frankly, that in some cases we drive vehicles that we're told not to talk about and they're already at dealerships.
Yeah.
Which
that's
is just.
Flip side of it.
That's inane and that's a whole different video right there. Real quick, I went to Florida to drive. The guys over at ECD, East Coast Defender, and they build a very cool thing. It's called the Beach Runner.
How much?
$249,000.
So it's affordable.
It's very affordable, but it's built to basically be, something that from the ground up is a completely restored vehicle.
So they electrify classic cars.
Well, not just electrify. They put a big V8, in this case, a Corvette V8 in it.
Oh, so did it look like this?
It looked like that, but if you go to TFL Car, actually the story's up
there.
I'm
sorry.
Yeah, and so they build other things, including a Series 3 version of the Jaguar E-Type, and you can either get it with the original powertrain, which they would completely rebuild, and the whole thing's rebuilt from the ground up. You can get it with a V8 out of a Corvette, basically. You can also get it with an all-electric powertrain. And that particular vehicle is very beautiful to look at and also extraordinarily expensive, well over $250,000.
I can't believe they're a publicly traded company.
They are publicly traded because their turnaround is pretty fast in terms of the amount of vehicles. They're building a couple hundred vehicles.
Makes the Cybertruck look cheap.
Yes. Yes, they do. But at the same time, this is a rich toy.
You know, when we were in high school, right, there were all these car companies that were building, and they're still doing it, but they were building, like, hot rods. They were building, like, specialty versions of cars that were out.
Sure.
And I think that's kind of been rekindled with all these electric conversions.
I would agree in some cases, yeah.
I mean, Hennessy has been around, right? These are cars that are... basically, manufactured that they kind of build up. But I'm talking about like a hot rod could be ground up. Yeah,
yeah, a tuner. So, Saline?
Yeah. Saline was another one, yeah.
Right down the street from where I grew up. Yeah. I used to walk by and see these weird-looking Mustangs.
Did you hear the rumble, the V8?
Yeah, actually I did. And I got beat up by a guard over there because I tried to sneak in and see what the cars were all about. I was like, I don't know, 14.
Well, we are running out of time, dude. Keep going. We got a lot more to go.
A lot more. Real quick, Easter Jeep Safari, that was also in March, and that was a lot of vehicles, but there was nothing new there other than the Mojave.
Yeah, and we talked about that over at Altfl.
The Gladiator.
The Gladiator Mojave, that was it.
Everything else was old. We took a deep dive on that, so head on over to Altfl.
April, which is this month.
Yep.
There are a ton of cars that we saw, because between just the three of us, we saw like a dozen cars. So you went to Florida, and I know I got it right this time, to see the Fiat 500e.
Yeah, I saw the Fiat 500. I drove the Fiat 500. It's only E now, so the iconic, which is right behind me. Here's the Cinquecento. I don't know if you guys can see it, but that's the original. Originally from 1957, I believe, 56. And Fiat says it's the original city car, so...
I guess the Beetle would disagree.
The Mini people would disagree, but,
yeah.
But the Mini came out after the Fiat 500. But they've made it all electric, so no more gas version, but there might be some talk of them going back to a gas version, with this trend of people going back to...
Can you imagine the poor engineers going, what?
So there's only one version originally, which is the red.
Yeah.
And they're red. And it's cool, but it's expensive, dude. It's 30...
And there's no soft top version of it.
There's no soft top version. It's just over $30,000.
Okay.
Which is a lot for a car that only has 150 miles of range.
True.
Once again, at 25, I'd be all over it. Uh-huh. At 33...
But this is the launch edition, so it's possible that they may actually
come... No, they're going to come with more expensive ones.
Really? They're not going to do anything?
No, there's a more expensive... Like 35,000...
Haven't they learned their lesson by not selling cars already?
Roman did a video, old versus new.
Yeah.
New versus old. And this image is, I mean, cars are getting bigger and bigger and bigger every single decade.
Yes.
I mean, you can even see a car that's like 10 years old versus the current car. And the current car, 500e, is huge now.
Here's the problem, okay? Here's the problem with it. It's about $33,000, and Andre and I drove the Camry, the new Camry.
Which is the next car on this list.
Which costs less money and gets 50 mpg because they're all hybrid.
So, and it has four doors.
It has four doors and has a lot more room. So I'm questioning, like, in an open market, I guess if you want a small city car, then sure, the Fiat 500e is your cup of tea. But, dude, for $3,000 less, you can get a Camry, which gets 50 mpg and that's a ton more room.
That's apples and oranges.
I know.
But on top of what you're saying, you also don't get the federal tax credit because that battery is definitely...
Unless you lease it.
So this would be the right car to lease if you...
The last version they were giving away, those are California compliance cars, and they were leasing them for like $99 a month.
Yeah, that was the previous one.
Right.
But I think that might be an interesting vehicle to lease. Let's move on to the Toyota Camry. You guys went to an event
in California
where you were thrown at like
800
six
different
vehicles.
Cars.
And this was, I'm going to straight out say it. Toyota totally screwed up by doing that. You put way too much on everybody's plate. And because of that, everybody could have done better with videos had you separated the events. But by cramming everything together, everybody was forced to speed up and thus have a less presentable product, with the exception of TFL.
There's a lot of really funky stuff, and by funky I mean weird. By weird I mean wrong. Happening right now in the PR world that I just don't understand, and I keep going back to Head Scratcher because it makes no sense. I'll give you a couple examples. First and foremost, to me, we were driving the Land Cruiser on this event along with the Camry, on this like prepared course that all the journalists were swooning over. And to me, having had a lot of off-road experience, I thought to myself, this is a freaking Land Cruiser. It's one of the most iconic cars in the world. Why am I not in the Serengeti? Why am I not in the savannas of pick your country? Why
or
am I not
Moab
in Moab?
Or the Rubicon.
Or the Rubicon. Or why am I on this, like with two little rock gardens? Everybody's like, oh, the course was really good. I'm like, we went over two rock gardens, some elephant
but
steps.
Prepared,
yeah, and the stream. I mean, this is such an iconic car. It deserves its own program. I just felt like
they were neutering it, basically.
And they wouldn't. And the other irony is, unless you somehow snuck it around, you couldn't get the thing on the road.
Yeah, and
you could not drive it on the road.
They weren't allowing it.
And the Camry should have been on the off-road trail, and I think that would have been
going fast.
Yes. And the Camry, now here's the, but this is the big news. Well, some of you may not know. Camry is now only hybrid, right?
And it's still the best seller in the sedan market, in the midsize sedan.
It is still one of the best selling vehicles on the planet next to pickups.
I'll just finish my rant real quick.
Yeah,
the other thing, and it's not just Toyota, right? It's everybody's doing this kind of wacky stuff. The other thing, we get there and we find out that our competition has had the vehicle ahead of time. I don't want to name names. It's not important. But there were a lot of YouTube. Okay, you can name names.
Nice.
A lot of YouTubers were there, but three outlets got the, I think three got the outlets ahead of time, got the vehicle ahead of time and got it to themselves and got it for like as long as they needed it to. And actually, let's name one because it's pretty obvious who they were. So I don't want to like pretend like we don't know. It was Throttle House, right? They got it, they jumped it, they broke it. And I'm not making any commentary on that, but I'm just saying it's kind of takes the wind out of your sail when you show up at a program and they give you a vehicle that somebody has now spent 3 days filming for 20 minutes.
And you have 20 minutes with
it. Which is what happened to the 4Runner at sunset. So I was walking up to the 4Runners they had on this hill stage. Sun was directly behind it. I walked up, I could not see what I was about to shoot. It was that bad, Nathan.
Yeah,
and it just takes the wind out of your sails, and you're like, why am I working so hard when Toyota went and gave this vehicle to our competition for 3 days to let them go camping in it and let them go jump boons.
Living daylights out of the poor thing, too.
Why am I working so hard when these guys, apparently they appreciate Throttle House more than they do us? That's how I felt.
Well, there's many other steps to this, and also I think that there's a huge... Here's my issue. You had six vehicles, I believe.
Five
vehicles and an event that would have been perfect for two. That's kind of the bottom line in terms of time-wise. And, oh, by the way, a hotel that you couldn't upload videos from because the internet didn't work there. But that's a different story. The point is that, unfortunately, they put way too many eggs in one basket.
We shouldn't just pick on Toyota.
I know. Let's pick on somebody else.
I will, because I have on my list after this another company that did that.
Like you said, I'm going to drive the Hummer EV, and there's an embargo on it. Why is there an embargo on a car that's been out for a year? In other words, an embargo is...
We drove it.
Yeah, we drove it. It's at the dealership. Why can't I just go out and drive it and file my story? Why do I have to wait until everybody has a chance? I mean, I get that that's trying to make a fair for everybody, but anybody could go out and pick it up at the dealership, which a lot of outlets do.
I think so. Turo at this point.
Yeah, or Turo. Yeah, I just don't understand that.
I agree. We always hold to the embargo.
We do, because they're rules.
And you guys get
program.
Really upset when we do that, but the bottom line is that, you know, if we want to play the game, we have to play by certain rules.
More than that, we're guests. Right.
No, so, but that's what I'm saying. I cut it down to the quick. Okay, real quick, the Toyota Crown, that's embargoed. We can't talk about that.
How it
drives, how it looks, how it smells, how it tastes.
Basically, it replaces the Venza. So if you love the Venza...
It's a two-row, luxurious...
But it's not just the Crown,
crossover.
It's the...
Insignia.
Insignia. Which is like the next level above the Crown, because the Crown's already out, so this is the fancy schmancy one.
Okay, and then there's the Toyota 4Runner, of course, and we have probably the most footage of the 4Runner amongst anybody. We certainly do with the
before
Tacoma.
The event, during the event, after the event.
And then the Toyota Land Cruiser that was there as well. Once again, Toyota. So those vehicles, all part of that event. And I don't think I'm missing anything.
No, you're fine.
Okay. Then, at around the same time, when they were there, I was in Northern California at the Hyundai Ioniq 5, Hyundai Elantra N, Hyundai Kona EV event. All of that piled into one day as well. Once again, a perfect event for one car, maybe two, but not three.
But you're at the Laguna Seca, my friend.
It was Laguna Seca. So the Ioniq 5N is the first fun EV I've driven.
Yeah.
It's just that simple. It is a fun EV.
And the other thing that's happening is you were there on your own. You didn't have a videographer.
No.
And that makes it really hard.
Yeah.
And this is also something that's going backwards. So when we first started this, these programs, you'd get an invite, and if you were a print person, you would use either take your own pictures, which, you know, is work and can be challenging, or most people would take the manufacturer pictures. But when you're doing video, it's another level above that. And so it's like separating a presenter from a videographer is like separating a print journalist from their laptop.
Yeah.
And yet the manufacturers are now going back to that, saying, I know you do video, but...
But one seat.
One seat only.
One seat.
It makes it extremely challenging, although...
It makes it extremely... To do a good job.
Yeah.
You can do it.
That's the problem is that, you know, I frankly, I didn't think I did a very good job.
So tell me, the N was the most fun thing you drove.
Yeah, the Ioniq 5N is the most fun electric car I've driven,
and you had
period.
It on the track, too.
I had it on Laguna Seca, and I got to...
Is it fast enough to scare you?
No, it's enough to make me laugh.
Oh, that's cool.
I laugh when I drive it because it's got like this fake gear sound and fake, you know, paddles and fake gearing where it actually will cut power, making it feel like that. And at first it's a total gimmick, but it actually makes it just kind of fun and silly.
But this is what I was talking about. Like, you have to have something that's, you know.
You have to crack the code.
It's a gimmick.
Yeah. Somehow.
Yeah,
but it is cool.
It is cool. I mean, you know, you're going to pay for it. You're going to pay
can you turn that off?
For this thing. You can. You can shut everything off. You can change the sound. You can actually change the bias of the where the power is going to, which is really cool. So you could drift
this thing.
It's very
video gaming.
It is, but you can throw all the power in the rear, throw that thing around a quarter, and get it to go sideways like a proper drift car. They're making a cup car version of this as well. I also drove the Elantra N, which was my first time driving the Elantra N, and they put us on an autocross circuit, and I drove both the manual and the automatic. Fun car, not pretty, but a fun car to drive. It's just it's unusual to look at. It's
what's
a weird looking car.
Is it the little turbo?
Yeah, it's the I think it's a 2.5 liter turbocharged engine.
And how much is the N?
Which one? The Ioniq 5N?
Yeah,
that's in the $50,000 range.
So it competes with the EV5 GT, right?
Yes, they're cousins.
And the range is what, 250-ish?
It's a little bit less with the because of all the extra race stuff it has on there.
Gotcha. Yeah,
but I think it's around 225, 230.
Ooh, that's short.
Yeah, but once again, you know, it all depends on the driver and all that.
I really want to drive it.
Because
fun. You said it was fun. I listened to other reviews that said it was fun and that they did a good job.
Even people who are not big EV people tend to say it's fun.
And it's cool that Hyundai is transitioning the N from internal combustion to electric.
Yeah, but they're keeping both, which is great. So you can get, eventually you'll be able to get almost everything they build with an N option. One day I would love to see them all lined up and perhaps try their N track. That would be really cool, right? Hyundai Kona EV. I drove that for the very first time. Inexpensive little EV that I think is, they start in the high 20s.
Okay.
And once again, it's one of those things where you lease it and then you're really getting a bargain of a car. And I thought it was really well set up. There's two different battery sizes, so you have a couple different range options. But it's not really what I would call a performance car, but it just handled great. It was just a good,
I'm not in love with the styling on that car.
Yeah, and the one I drove was marker yellow or whatever
you want to call it. I actually feel like the previous version looked better.
The new one...
It looks like a helmet to me.
No, to me it looks futuristic. Like, but on top of that, though, regardless of the looks of it, it's wider, longer, and taller, more accommodating. And
it just looks like it's...
But Roman, if you wait a year, they'll change it.
Yes, I know. But those headlights on the side just don't work for me.
Yeah,
like everybody's doing it.
I don't know. I like that light bar across the front. I really like.
Everybody's moving... So there's a signature light near the top.
Yeah, they're all doing a bar across the front, across the back.
And then the headlamps are lower.
Just like my car.
It must be good for visibility.
Well, that's exactly what they say.
Bad for fender benders.
But if you hit anything with that.
Everything has to be replaced if you crunch those.
Yeah.
So shortly after that, I went over to the Ford Mustang 60th anniversary in Chattanooga.
That's a big one.
Charlotte. And I got to mess around a little bit, but more importantly, got to see the 60th anniversary Mustang.
So let's talk about this.
Yeah.
So they're only building 1,965.
That's correct.
I wonder why.
Which is small. Yeah, I wonder why, 1965.
Yeah.
But there's no performance upgrade to it.
None whatsoever.
It's a paint and sticker.
And wheel.
and wheel package.
Yes, so, but also it's, you get a little placard inside the car.
It's a nice placard.
Yes, and then they've changed a few things. I see what they've done in terms of they made there's only a few colors available, and they made those colors very similar to the ones available in 1964 and a half and 1965. Yeah,
what's that white color? It's that iconic white.
Windsor white, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. Yeah.
Wimbledon.
Wimbledon. It might be
something
Wimbledon.
Yeah. It's something
British.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah,
you guys
yeah.
in the UK, you could tell us what it is. So anyway, the point is that they have some things that kind of sort of remind you of the original ones, but it's just essentially a wheel and sticker package, and it's a cool looking car. It's just not to me what a full retro thing is, but at the same time. There are people, there will be, I guarantee you, 1,965 people who will be happily.
I think they're probably sold out by now.
Oh, I would
imagine probably get
so.
A manual too, right?
Yes, so you can get it manual great. Or automatic. You can get a hardtop or convertible.
Well, yeah, I love that. Yeah. Right, and the last car there?
The last one is the Acura. Oh, no, there's two more.
A couple more.
Real quick, the Chevrolet Traverse. I went to, where did I go? I went to.
Last week, right?
Yeah, Georgia, and I drove that. And so the Traverse, there's two different ones that we drove. There's the Z71. And then there's the RS. The Z71 actually has a different mechanical system than all the other ones.
Oh, I had a question for you, but yeah. Can you talk about the driving yet or no?
No.
So but, let's get to the Acura.
But doesn't it have a similar engine to my truck?
They are related. I can talk about that real quick. They are related, different displacement, so it's smaller than
it's
yours.
It's a four-cylinder.
Right, yes. Turbocharged four-cylinder.
Ferrari does programs where you can't even tell you're going on the program.
Yeah, of course they do.
And that's where it's going.
They have somebody who's like following you around with a dark hat on.
No, I mean, in public, you can't even say, I went and drove the Parasangue. You can't even say that.
I'm glad, because who wants to drive a Parasangue? No. So
you don't want to drive a four-seater Ferrari, huh?
By the way, manufacturers need to make that clear. Like, if they want you to talk about something or not.
Well, the Toyota had like five different or six different embargo dates.
I know.
So we're still waiting on
the
one of the dates.
Keep them. Yeah, my God.
Which does it isn't until next month. Yeah. So,
June.
Yeah.
No, June.
Oh, it's June. That's right.
June.
We've had events where we've gone to and we've had to wait 6 months. Remember some of the other stuff we did with FCA where we had to wait until like September.
Yeah.
Before we could put stuff up. It was crazy. Anyway, that's a long time ago.
So, there's a secret place that Andre went to, which he can't talk about.
Oh, yeah. You can't tell anybody about that secret, very cold place that you went to. I can't say anything else.
Siberia.
That's just, I think it's a program.
So the final vehicle.
The programs in Siberia are the kind you don't want to go on.
So real quickly about the Traverse. We already have a video, which is just a basic walk around, giving you the essential thing.
Yep.
But the whole off-roading, driving, using Super Cruise, all that is in the next video. It's coming very soon.
Me and Andrew have to go buy a Cybertruck.
Okay, and then finally is the Acura ZDX. And the Acura
ZDX. By the time they listen to this, they'll know we own it.
Yeah. The Acura ZDX was driven by, I think, Tommy and Case?
Yeah.
And so, we're
Case. But it's kind of also GM-ish. It's a GM.
Yeah, that's the same platform as that went under the Honda Prologue. So there you go. Okay, that's pretty much putting everything a nice little bow on top of it. I apologize for Roman's rant.
But we didn't even talk about like Roman went and drove a couple of Porsches. He drove a race car, Porsche race car.
Did that happen this year?
Yeah, that happened this year. I drove this Porsche
that went to the top of the world or something.
To the highest volcano.
Oh.
This is amazing how much stuff actually happens.
Oh, there's a lot of stuff that, I mean, concerning all the cars we get over at TFL and all the events we've gone to, New York Auto Show, Chicago Auto Show, and this is 4 months. This is in 4 months.
Yeah.
All right? So stop your complaining.
I'm not complaining. But we do have to go buy a Cybertruck.
Yeah, so guys, by the time you see this,
we're only waiting 4 years to buy this thing.
Four and a half.
Almost four and a half
so,
years.
Excuse me if I'm a little anxious.
He's extremely anxious to
spend $104,000.
Yeah. On the truck.
I know.
Yeah, so sorry, Tommy, there's no inheritance for you. Okay. So, anyway, guys, thank you very much for joining us. We're going to wrap this up. Hey, if you have any of these vehicles you particularly liked, let us know in the comments below.
And we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Ciao.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Zaxby's just out Philly the Philly again. The Zaxby's Chicken Philly is back with garlic aioli, sautéed peppers and onions, decadent melty cheese, and your choice of Zaxby's signature crispy chicken fingers or delicious grilled chicken. But it's only back for a limited time, so enjoy it while you can. No pressure. It's just the greatest sandwich of all time on a ticking clock. Order the Chicken Philly today. Who's got the sauce? Zaxby's.